Vibe tribes.
Welcome back, people. With another episode of Vibes and Tribes with me, your host Baze. And today it's a family affair, people. I've got none other than my brother joining us on the podcast today. So Baze, I don't know if you wanna just quickly introduce yourself.
Yeah, I go by the name of Mr. Baze. Inspirational, motivational speaker.
Come on.
Been doing it for the last 11 years now.
Yes,
a long time, 11 years. Traveled all across the country doing it. Been international doing it as well, in terms of countries like Switzerland. And yeah, man, like my brother said, it's a family affair. So
come on.
I believe it's going to be a juicy episode.
If he doesn't say so himself. Yeah, but with that, before we get into it, you know this Vibes and Tribes. We ask this to all of our guests who kind of join us on these episodes. When you go away on holiday or when you're going away on one of these work trips, what's the first thing you pack, Mr. Baze?
Boy, what is the first thing I pack? Probably my boxers. I do not want to forget my boxers.
Practical.
Yeah, mate.
Spoken from a bad experience, it sounds like.
Nah, just spoken as someone who's very organised.
Okay, organised. All right, you've heard it here first, people. It's boxers. But let's get straight into it. So we mentioned the fact that my brother's a motivational speaker, but we're going to take it way, way back, as we have done in these Getting to Know the Tribe episodes. We'll start with secondary school. So you started at Warren, didn't you? You didn't even start at Chadwell where we went, did you?
No, I started at Wanstead.
Wanstead. Yeah, sorry, I got it wrong.
How does my own brother not know what secondary school I went?
Whoopsie.
Terrible start, mate. Can we edit this out?
Okay, so you started at Wanstead and you were there from what, years 7 to 9?
7 to 11.
You was there 7 to 11?
That was brother.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so you was at Wanstead 7 to 11.
Yeah.
And yeah, how was that for you? How did you enjoy secondary school? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I think I definitely enjoy the social aspect of secondary school. I feel like I'm a people person. So,
yeah.
I got along with like everyone in my year group. I was like one of the most popular kids in my year group.
Hey.
Played for the football team.
Yeah.
My time at school as well, I think from year 9, I joined the borough. So I started playing football for like the borough at the district.
That.
So yeah, man, I enjoyed. I enjoyed school. Obviously, made some lifelong friends in school as well. And definitely loads of experiences. In school.
And from the academic standpoint, how did you find it?
I didn't enjoy that aspect as much.
Okay.
GCSEs, I didn't do great, to be fair. I think I got 4 GCSEs and your A to Cs, and you're meant to get 5 as a standard. So like, even when I go into the schools, I kind of stress the fact that, you know, I failed not because I wasn't intelligent, but simply because I was lazy and didn't really see the importance of education at the time. And, you know, you just see it as parents nagging you, teachers nagging you. But the older you get, you kind of see the importance of why you should kind of stay focused and pay attention. And this is why I guess I do what I do for a living, man.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into that, don't worry. So, okay, so we've gone through years 7 to 11, and then, so you do make it into sixth form then?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, and that's where you join me,
right,
at Chadwell. Come on, we plug Chadwell again. And yeah, what was that experience like for you, obviously moving away from your close friends and family? Well, your close friends.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't mind it, to be fair, because still kept in contact with my friends.
And it was closer to home.
It was literally walking distance from the house. Yeah, so I definitely didn't mind that. Didn't have to get like 2 buses to school now. Obviously, I think even I came with one of my friends from secondary school, Anton.
Yeah.
Obviously, I made friends at Chadwell here because, like I said, I'm a people person. So meeting new people is never a challenge for me. I enjoyed my time at Chadwell, man. It was different, but it was just nice kind of establishing myself in a new environment. But again, and I think with Chadwell, where it was different and where I didn't mind it, I was now at a stage where it's like sixth form. So you're getting 3 periods.
Yeah.
You actually chose the subjects that you're studying.
So what did you choose?
So I did psychology, media, drama, and English literature.
Okay.
I just liked English. That was my favourite subject.
You're very well spoken, so I can see why.
I just enjoyed it. So those were the subjects that I studied.
And when you picked those subjects, was that with a view to do one of those at university, or did you just pick them because you felt like you were good at them? What kind of went
a bit
into
of
that
both,
decision?
To be fair, I've always said that, you know, if I'm going to do exams, then I want to kind of do the exams in subjects that I'm pretty good in, I at least have some form of an interest in.
Mm-hmm.
Then as well, I did think, okay, cool. If I was going to, I knew that what I'm studying, one of those subjects is a subject that I'm going to progress to go on to in university.
Okay.
I kind of always knew that I wanted to go university. So I kind of used my A-levels to kind of like fill the subjects out.
Okay, nice. And would you say that, obviously you mentioned that you didn't do too well in GCSEs, you did better in your sixth form?
Yeah, yeah, definitely did better in sixth form. And then I got like all the UCAS points I needed for all the universities.
That you applied for?
Applied for.
Okay. So yeah, that takes us nice and, you know, briskly through your school and your sixth form. So what did you end up going to study at university?
Yes, I went to study media production.
Okay.
So the subjects I was studying, media really stuck out to me.
Mm.
I liked acting, but then I thought, like, you know, I wouldn't mind working for like the BBC.
Oh, okay.
Behind the scenes initially. But then yeah, so that's how it kind of initially started. I got into the video side of things, editing. I found that quite interesting, the practical sides.
Yeah. And just to touch on that, so obviously, you know, you picked the A levels that you wanted. Would you say that you always knew that you wanted to do media, like even before that? So from year seven, when do you think that idea kind of started coming to you?
I think definitely within secondary school. But what happens is, because media is not one of those subjects you do within like GCSEs.
Mm.
So I always said I want to try it for A-levels, see, because, you know, you might, something might seem appealing on the outside. And then when you actually do it, you find that, oh, actually, I don't enjoy it. And that's kind of the experience I had with drama, because I love acting, love drama.
Mm.
But I hated the theory side of it.
Yeah.
I couldn't, I struggled with like trying to remember lines.
Mm.
So it's like, I would prefer to just improvise everything.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
You can't improvise everything.
Yeah.
You've actually got lines you have to remember.
Yeah, so, of course.
You find out things like that. So it's like, I would have loved to have been an actor.
Mm.
You know, that's one of the things I wanted to do as well when I was young. But the amount of lines they have to learn, that just doesn't work for me.
It's matting, isn't it?
When I'm acting, like, you can just see that I'm trying to remember my next line. And
that just
doesn't work. So, yeah.
Do you know what's so mad on that? And this is like completely off script. So recently went to watch Harry Potter at the theatre.
Mm.
Harry Potter forgot his lines. It was a bad thing.
No way.
Oh my goodness. So Harry, if you're watching this, bro, fix up. I paid peas for those tickets.
The main guy.
I don't want to give away the plot because it's a new one. But like Draco Malfoy is like whispering the lines to him. Like he had to say it like three times and then they cut one scene early.
Wow.
Like absolute mad thing. So
it is pressure when you've got an audience in front of you and you're trying to act as well. Because what you have to remember is not only are you remembering your lines.
Yeah.
You have to act. And I feel like live acting is harder than film acting.
Mm.
Because if you forget your line in the film, they cut scene,
they prompt
you with your line,
and
then it's like it never happened.
Yeah, exactly, of course.
But when you're live and you've got an audience there, you can't do that.
Now, theatre is where you really cut your cloth, man. There's no joke in that.
Definitely.
So you mentioned that you got all of the points that you needed to get into all of the universities of your choice. How do you then make the decision? Because I think you can have up to five, right? How do you make the decision to go to the university you end up attending?
I always had my top two.
Okay.
So literally just picked number one.
Okay, yeah, nice,
and
nice,
I think
nice.
That the university that I picked, Coventry, obviously, was the best out of my bunch for the course that I wanted to do.
Okay.
They had quite a strong media department. So.
Okay, nice. And did you ever do an open day? Because I don't think I ever did. I don't think mum and dad ever joined me.
Didn't do an open day, but I had to go down and do like an interview.
Oh, okay.
So like I went down and did an interview on like the main campus. But even then, like it just seemed like a proper ghost town. Like,
oh, really?
Village, yeah. So between that and Freshers Week, it was a total different vibe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So was you like having second thoughts when you went there and it was a bit of a ghost
town? I got there and I just thought, right, man, I'm sticks. Like, you know, I'm going to be the only black guy here.
Yeah, I hear you.
But, mate, when like Freshers Week day one, like...
Just mad ting.
Listen, it was like being in America. Like,
oh, really?
Sorority, like, you see everything happening, man.
Mm.
It was good, though.
So we'll just, you know, talk generally about university. So obviously it goes without saying you enjoyed your time there.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And how did you find the course? How did you find media production?
I found the course all right. Again, like I was very like, I think my approach to education has always been a pretty laid back approach.
Mm.
So if I enjoy it, then I'll be engaged. If I don't enjoy it, I'll be disengaged. But I think this is something I was saying to like the kids I was talking to today. I think the biggest shock to me was the freedom that you had.
Mm.
So like you could like bunk a lecture and No one's phoning home. No one's writing home. There was so much freedom. It was just like...
And for us, that was a big thing.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
We were kept under lock and key.
Mate, he was in lockdown before lockdown.
That's it. So, COVID is nothing to us.
This is nothing, mate. We were born in lockdown.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was like... That freedom, that independency, it was just mad because it's like I've never experienced that before.
Yeah.
So it is literally, like, you are accountable for your actions. It's like it's either you want to pass or you don't. Yeah. And no one's going to chase you. Mm. No one's going to nag you. Mm. Like you literally go to university because you know you want to study and you want to get a degree at the end of it.
And what do you think? Do you think that the independence you got there versus what we had at home, do you think it had a positive impact on the outcome, negative impact on reflection?
I think it had a positive impact on me personally because I was looking forward to it. Where, like you said, at home, things were pretty strict for us and pretty restricted. It was nice to have that independence. I'll tell you a funny story. So I remember my freshers week, I think one time, like, mum and dad phoned me, and I think it was like 10 o'clock at night, innit? Yeah. And dad's like, oh, like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm about to go out. He's like, don't be going out.
Did he? Did he say that?
Yeah, he tried
to
tell me not to go. I was like, fuck you, man.
Oh my God.
So it was just like, even that alone, it was like, it was nice to kind of have that freedom of, like, he can't stop me from doing the things that I want to do because that's the best way you learn, man, by having that independency, having that freedom, you know, as they say, kind of spreading your wings, man. And then you learn, innit? You make mistakes and, okay, cool, I won't do that again. And you learn that, okay, cool, I know how to manage, like, things like paying my bills on time and
I
enjoyed the experience, man.
Okay, and as you kind of navigate through, it's 3 years you did it, Cobble. Yeah, it was 3 years. And as you navigate through and, like, you know, you're going through, do you think about doing work experience? Do you think like, okay, media is still something I want to do, I want to still get into the BBC? Like, is your mind changing?
So what happens is you're navigating through end of my second year. I was there and I was just like, I don't like this. I don't see myself going to work for the BBC. Everything they've kind of taught me and I've learned, I'm not feeling it. But then I was just like, I ain't gonna let the last 2 years be a waste, so I'm definitely just going to complete my last year. And this is what I say to people all the time, like, it's okay to change your mind, you know, because it's like sometimes we're treated as the moment we say we want to do this or go into that career field, you're not allowed to change your mind. But of course you are, and I encourage people that the younger you are, that's like the age where you should be starting and stopping things and experimenting and seeing what works for you, what doesn't work for you. So I always knew that, cool, I'll finish my degree just so I have something to fall back on. But then I was definitely going to explore my choices, which I did once I finished university.
Okay, nice. So, with that, you come to the end of university. And like you said, you've had a fantastic time, right? You've made some more friends for life.
Yeah,
I'm assuming. And then you come back home, you're in the big bad world now. Now you know that, okay, media isn't something you want to do. Like, what's kind of your first job out of university? Where do you kind of go towards first?
I think you still try and apply for a job with the degree that you have.
Okay.
And I think what I found quite annoying was, growing up, it was drilled into my head, like, you know, go university, get a degree, get a job, go university, get a degree, get a job. The first things all of these jobs said when I applied for them was,
experience.
You need work experience.
Yeah, mad thing.
I said, what are you talking about?
I said,
I've just been at uni for 3 years. I know what I'm doing. You actually need like at least 2 years. That's like 2 years. That's like, well, why didn't they tell me this? Because like you said, when I was at uni, I could have been volunteering. I could have been doing like one day a week at a media company. And I could have literally over the 2 years, 3 years, built up my work experience alongside studying. But this isn't something that they teach you. So then what I found was, you know, it took me a long time to get a job. So I was probably unemployed for about, I would say, 9 months to a year.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I had to go on like job seekers allowance
and get
my benefits just to survive and pay for like stuff like my phone bill, you know. And it was difficult. 100% it was difficult. So that's why I always say to people, like, if you're going to university, know why you're going to university and like make sure you obviously enjoy yourself, but don't neglect the academic side of it because 100%. That's what's going to really like determine where the route of your life goes after that.
And like to your point, not just don't neglect the academics, but also like do research, because there are some things that schools just don't teach you, such as, you know, needing work experience. I think some people feel like, oh, it's an optional, it's a nice to have, but ultimately when you get into the big bad world, there's thousands and thousands of people who are ahead of you on 100%. That so, you know, you need to listen to, you know, podcasts like this, and, you know, mentors. If you've got older brothers and sisters, you know, you need to learn from their experiences, right? Because it can really help you to kind of avoid, you know, a similar situation.
Definitely.
Okay, so you said you were unemployed for, yeah, let's say like 9 months then, and what is it you go into, and how long are you there for?
So I went into an office job.
Okay.
At Bernardo's charity office. And that was literally a 6-month contract. Because I'd been on like Job Seekers for so long, they were like, we need to find you something.
Yeah.
I had to even do like this special course while I was on Job Seekers allowance, just so I could continue getting Job Seekers allowance. And then like, because I always had a perception of as well, okay, cool, yeah, man, I'd love to do an office job, you know, wear my shirt and trousers, and, get my Tesco meal deal, eat it before midday, go out for lunch again. You have your perception. But what I found was, I found it boring because I had no interest in the job. I was dealing with like tenders and stuff like that, and I was so confused, and no one trained me to do what I was doing as well. So I found like, although it was even pretty much on a part-time basis, I would show up to work just staring at a computer screen, trying to stay awake because of bored out of my head, and I actually don't know what I'm doing. And it was difficult, but I'm glad I had that experience, because it kind of killed the myth of, oh, just get an office job. Do you know what I'm saying? And I wouldn't have known that if I didn't have that experience. I was grateful for that experience.
Yeah, and to that point, I suppose, even though it was boring, when you get into, I suppose, the working sector and just earn your own money, does that give you like a newfound hunger? Like, yeah, I'm on the ladder. I'm ready to go and attack this now.
Yeah, no, definitely. You feel good, like, number one, just like getting up to go to work. And then even like when you're at work, you're like talking to your colleagues and, you know, everyone's got their sort of goals and aspirations, whether it's to like get promotions within the company, or this is like a starting block for them and then they want to go on to something else. So it just kind of like motivate you, the different conversations that you were having. I remember I started at the same time as another girl at the time, and you know, we were kind of like on the same level, and we would have conversations about what we're trying to do, what we're trying to achieve, and even the conversations I had with her, well, that would really motivate me. But then it also get me thinking about, actually, what is it that I want to do in my life? Like, what direction am I trying to go into? Because this is a 6-month contract, and you know, what's going to happen after the 6 months? Do I go back to square one again? Am I just going to go straight back onto benefits? Or am I going to have that hunger to, because, you know, you've had a taste of like earning some form of an income and salary. And naturally, in it, you don't want that to stop, because, you know, Job Seekers is definitely nowhere as near as what you're going to be paid.
It's not sustainable. I hear you. So where does that lead you to then after the 6 months are done?
So crazy thing happens now. As my contract's coming to an end, I have a friend say to me, "Oh, are you working at the moment?" And I don't know why I said no. But I knew that my contract was coming to an end, but I still were working at the time. But she's like, "Oh, I think you'd be really good for this company." I was like, "What company?" And she said the company that they send speakers into schools to motivate children.
Okay.
And funny enough, I knew like the guy who owned the company.
Okay.
So I was like, "All right, cool. Like, I've heard of it before. I didn't know they actually established the company. They're actually doing it." So I said, "I'll come along and check it out," kind of thing. I said, I weren't sure about it because I never really saw myself doing it, but I said, you know, I'm open-minded. And you know what? The first two speakers that I saw, I never forget them, was a guy and a girl. I went up to like Birmingham for 2 days. And what they said really motivated me. It was just perfect for me, because where I was at that sort of stage in my life where I was transitioning, it was just what I needed at the time to just motivate me to like take things seriously and think about my life and what direction I want my life to go into. And then on the flip side of it, as you know, a job, you know, it was just perfect for me and my character. You know, you're not set in one place, you're not in an office, you get to travel across the country. I saw the speakers having fun, you know, having jokes with the kids. And then not only that, they were motivating the kids, so it was also like a fulfilling role as well. And then at the time when I kind of like spoke to them about the money side of it, like it seemed quite profitable as well, that like you can make good money from it. So it just ticked all the boxes for me, kind of thing. I said, this is definitely something that I'd like to do. And that's what I Well, that's what I went into, literally from there.
And I suppose let's just go through that whole journey, yeah? Because like you said, you've been doing it for 11 years. Mm. You had no prior experience. So somebody literally said, you know, are you working? I think this would be great for you. So you kind of got it almost, that, like, you got the intro for a recommendation.
Yeah.
And was there like a formal interview process, or was there like a trial period, or how did that?
Wasn't really, obviously I spoke to the boss and he remembered who I was. Mm. And he was like, yeah, cool, come and observe these speakers kind of thing. And it was almost like training began from like day one.
Okay.
With just even going out to observe the speakers. Okay. Naturally, I would go to more sessions, and then they'll give me like a 2 minute, 5 minute sort of section to kind of quickly say something so I can get a feel of it. Mm. And then obviously there's training days and stuff like that.
How long would you say that, so typically, so for me, obviously I work in a tech company, we've got like an onboarding, which is probably like your probation period, right, of 3 months. Mm. I don't know if it's the same for you, it's probably not, but how long would you say your onboarding was before you was comfortable and you were kind of leading sessions and stuff like that?
Boy.
Sorry, I'm taking you way back. I told you I was.
Yeah, but you know what it is? I just feel like it's different for everyone.
Yeah, that's true.
And the reason why I say it's different for everyone, it just depends on how quick you pick things up, as you would know. Mm. So for me, fortunately, well, I believe speaking is like a gift for me. Mm. So I found like, not only did I pick things up quite quickly, I was very hungry to pick things up. I was very hungry to learn. Mm. So I was learning off everyone. Okay, what jokes do you tell? Like, what questions do you ask? What's your breathing like? Who do you look at when you're giving Like, I was asking all the questions because I just wanted to be good at the job. Like, and I was picking their brains on their mindset and why they do things. And so I would say it probably took me a couple of months before I got comfortable as well, naturally, because you're talking to an audience that doesn't necessarily want to hear from you. Mm-hmm. You know, I always say if you can motivate school kids, especially secondary school, you can motivate anyone. Mm-hmm. Because even when you look at the corporate sector, you know, when they bring in like speakers to come talk to your team and stuff, you know, everyone's adults, they're mature, they want that energy boost, they want that motivation, they want that personal development. Whereas in secondary school, you don't want that.
Yeah.
You just want to have a good time.
That's true. You're just here to catch
you
know, fire.
You don't want someone to motivate you for your education.
Yeah.
So, I found that, it was definitely, took me probably a couple of months, but then I say this, it took me 2 years to realise that this is actually what I can see myself doing.
Oh, wow.
Long term.
And
I didn't have that confidence.
Oh, what, that you could make it?
Not that I could make it, but I was still making up my mind. Because it was never my goal to be a speaker. Mm. So there was always that thing at the back of my mind, how long is this going to last for?
Yeah.
How long is this going to last for? Can I actually see myself doing
it? Did you have, and you know, you talk about the fact that you went 100% on it. Did you have something in mind, like, were you still holding out dreams to be an actor or something?
I was just like, maybe, you know, actor, I might start rapping.
Okay.
You know? But it was just one of them things that I was still like trying to make up my mind kind of thing. But it took me about 2 years to say, yeah, man, I enjoy this and I can see myself doing it long term.
Okay, just taking it back to the whole, okay, you were really engaged and, you know, you were picking people's brains. So when I had Connor on previously, he spoke around the fact that, yeah, he's always researching like crypto as an example. Mm-hmm. For you, when it came to speaking, okay, you're picking people's brains, but are you like putting in the work on YouTube, Google, like reading books? Is that all happening at this stage, or does that happen just as you evolve over time?
It happens as you evolve over time. So I think for me, in my speaking journey, there was probably three what I will call critical points that transformed my speaking career. And I do thank my boss for this. The first one was, because I was doing stuff and I didn't even realise what I was doing. Mm. I didn't realise, like, when I was doing certain things that it was actually a technique that these speakers use.
Yeah.
Until I learned from the master who actually incorporated the technique. Okay. So
feel free to shout them out if you want.
Yeah. So the first one I learned from, and what kind of transformed my speaking career, was I went to a Tony Robbins seminar.
Oh yeah.
In the XL, 5,000 people. It's called Unleash the Power Within, UPW.
Okay.
This was like in 2012.
Yeah.
Like, we did a fire walk, so I walked on fire. Like,
oh wow.
Burning coal, like, did not burn me. Like,
really?
Yeah, it was crazy.
Mad thing.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, the whole experience. Jesus, take the wheel. The whole experience, like, when he says jump, I was jumping.
Yeah.
I was clapping. Yeah. He says yes. Like,
did you go alone or did you go with people?
I went with like a few people from the company. Okay. So the boss had paid for us, and them tickets aren't cheap at all, man.
Yeah.
So that's why I said I really appreciate it. And I learned how, like, he incorporated music because he used it. The techniques that we would use in the kids, he used on us.
Okay.
Because he was the guy that kind of started it. Yeah, so I saw how he embedded music, and that straight away gave me an understanding. This is how I use music when I'm talking to the kids.
So you don't just use it for using its sake. You understand like the reasoning behind it.
It's like
it.
When you go cinema, right? Yeah. They play different music to, you know, control your emotions. So if it's an action scene, it's going to be upbeat. If it's a horror scene, it's going to be a bit of suspense. Mm. If it's like a love scene, it's a bit emotional. Mm. They just know how to control your emotions, but it's the music that does it. If they were just talking with no music, it wouldn't have the same impact.
That's true.
So I clocked onto that very quickly, and I was like, well, if I want to have like this impact with students, I need this type of music. If I want to have this impact, I need this type of music. So I learned how to even just incorporate music within my talk. So that was like life-changing for me. Then the second thing I did was I started like naturally like reading, getting into books, reading books, and the book that changed my mindset again was Rich Dad Poor Dad. Robert Kiyosaki. That just transformed my mindset.
He gave that book to me to read.
I've only
read half though, but yeah.
You know, but I told you from a long time ago about that book. And then what I did from there was that gave me a new hunger, new motivation again. And then the final piece to the puzzle was when I was introduced to Eric Thomas, E.T., the hip-hop preacher. He's the number one motivational speaker in the world.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I still listen to him today.
Yeah.
And it was the fact that he looks like me. He wears a snapback. He talks to Fortune 500 companies with a snapback on, because in the UK we have this perception of, you know, if we're going to go corporate, we've got to wear like a suit and tie. But he kind of debunks that myth by staying wearing his Jordans, shorts and a t-shirt and a hat. And they receive him really well. But not only that, his story is like from the age of 16, he left home, became homeless for 2.5 years.
Mad thing.
Sleeping in and out of abandoned buildings, eating out of trash cans, like, you know, tough journey. And then when you fast forward to today, he can charge up to $100,000 an hour. He speaks to NFL football teams, NBA basketball teams, as I said, Fortune 500 companies. And he's done a lot. He's done like voiceover work for like big major companies. And you think, if you can go from homeless to that, then anyone can do. There's no excuse for anyone not to be successful, kind of thing.
And how is it that your paths crossed, if you don't mind me asking?
YouTube. I think my boss again told me about him. So then I went on YouTube, and then from the first video he captured me, and I was just immersed in him.
Okay.
And then I've been to like, he's been to London, so I've been to like two of his seminars when he's come to London as well.
Okay.
But he is just, if you want motivation other than obviously me,
yeah,
you know, but Eric Thomas, man, E.T. the hip hop preacher, he is the number one. Like, if you want energy, if you want that kick up the bum, if you want that reality check, he is the guy that's going to get you energized and get you there is no one better than him. You see, and I say this because I feel like as a speaker, I've learned that different speakers have different strengths. So someone like Tony Robbins, he's good if you want to learn how to master something, you know, transforming your habits, you know, forming new habits. He can train your mindset in a way that, yeah, mastery. That's Tony Robbins. Like, if I want to know how to like get out of habits, I need to go Tony Robbins. If I just want that raw energy, motivation, it's Eric Thomas. Okay. If you want to know about like attracting things, it's Bob Proctor. So there's just so many people you can go to for different things.
Okay, so I'm going to ask this now before I forget it. Yeah. So, you know, when you're all said and done, 10, 15 years time, what are people going to want to go to Mr. Beezy for? Like, what are you trying to specialise in? In everything? Or are you trying to, just learn off everyone or hone in on one thing?
Yeah, my thing is motivation as well. I think 10 years from now, 15 years from now, I want people to watch my videos and be inspired. I want them to watch my videos and have their mindset transformed. Watch my videos and just get that motivation that maybe they've lost. Because that's another, I think, mistake I feel a lot of speakers make. They try and do too much. And I know that my strength is motivation. So if you're going to come to me for anything, you're coming to me. Just like I go to Eric Thomas for motivation, you're going to come to Mr. Beezy for that, to get motivated.
Okay, cool. And this is a thing, obviously, you know, motivational speaking is something that I think, you know, especially with Netflix and stuff, we see it more and more, and we're seeing those videos. I'm trying to think of how to actually ask the question, but do you find that you come up against like a tough crowd, or do you feel like the people that you're trying to engage, I know you mentioned the kids, they don't even want it. Do people want this motivation?
Do you know what it is? I feel like the UK is so different to America. So I feel like in America, like, motivation is big, it's well received. Whereas in the UK, I feel like we have a bit more of a negative mindset, especially when it comes to things of motivation. We always have this mindset of, what can you tell me? Or I ain't trying to hear what you got to say. Or, you know, we are very judgmental in the UK. And that's one thing I want to kind of break. I want to kind of like really introduce motivation into the UK scene, because it's something that we definitely need in this country. You know, one thing you'll realise, and I love the fact this is Vibes and Tribes, you know, when you travel to different countries, you'll see just in general how friendly people are.
This is
like, you can walk down the street and say hello and no one's offended. Whereas you come to London,
the train is a mad thing.
You just say hello to someone, you could get into a fight because they think that you're trying something.
Yeah.
So just in general in the UK, we have a negative mind. It's like we've been wired negatively. I don't know why that is. So for me, motivation isn't big here, but it's something that I would generally love to be a pioneer for and make big in the UK, because we generally do need it in our companies and our schools everywhere.
So guys, look, you've heard that here. You know, we'll talk about what my brother's doing at the moment, but look, if you feel like your work needs it, if you feel like your family needs it, if you feel like anybody could, you know, do with some motivation, I'm definitely going to leave my brother's socials and everything. I'll let him plug them at the end, but please feel free to hit him up. I know he's sick, I've seen him in real life. But getting back to it, I know from obviously speaking to you, a lot of your work is done with school kids, right?
Yeah.
Would you say like that is that your primary focus, or is it just because that's where you started and you've kind of seen yourself there?
It's the age old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
And I feel like another mistake people make, they try and do too much too quickly. So I've always said, I know I'm good, right, without sounding arrogant, but you've got to establish yourself in an arena first.
Yeah.
Before you can branch out. Do you know what I'm saying? Like crypto, you know?
Yeah.
You ain't going to buy every single coin that you see.
You're going to start off
with one coin, see if that kind of makes a bit of profit. And then when that does, it's like, okay, I'll dabble into another one. So same thing with motivational speaking. There's three sort of interests that I have. I want to do, obviously, education's my bread and butter. I'll always do education. And the reason why, I just believe in setting up the next generation in the right way that they should go in terms of their mindset, making them believe that they can believe in themselves, dreaming big. That's important to me. Just giving them the right type of mindset to be successful. But then I want to talk to businesses and corporate people and give them that support that they need as well. Get into the mindsets of their employers, make their employees come to work for more than their paycheck. And then I want to talk to sports teams. Because, you know, naturally you need motivation in sports. So, you know, I mean, if you're a Man United fan, Arsenal fan or Tottenham fan right now, you know, your team needs motivation.
big motivation.
If your team's going through that relegation battle, you know, you're going to need that motivation.
Yeah.
And these are things that I'm passionate about and definitely want to be doing as well.
Okay. And one thing that's just come to me, for any aspiring motivational speaker, you know, to people who are listening to this and they're like, you know what, this sounds like it could be like a piece of me. Is there any like standardized qualification? Are there any like steps that you would advise people taking?
Just know how to deliver your story. Because a lot of motivational speaking is knowing how to deliver stories. So if you know how to articulate yourself and you know what you've been through, then that's your starting point.
Yeah.
And I feel like, again, don't be a speaker, but be yourself.
Okay.
Because this whole thing of, I'm a speaker, like I said, I think one of my strengths is that I'm authentic. I just keep it real. I don't try and put on an act or a show. I mean, yes, we have fun, we laugh, but I also don't lose a serious message. And I think that, just know the audience that you want to speak to and know the message that you want to say. Because again, like I speak to so many people, oh yeah, I want to speak to this group and that group. And there's so many things that they're trying to do. So literally just pick one thing that you're going to specialize in. Like you kind of asked me, make that your focus. And then what will happen is naturally people would then ask you, oh, can you do this?
Yeah.
Oh, and can you do that? And that's how I even like started getting into corporate as well. Because someone said, oh, can you do this? Can you come and speak to this team? Can you come and speak at this company? Is this something you can do? And I was like, oh, yeah, I can. Just because the fact that they know I'm a speaker. And they know that I speak in schools, but it was like, you're that good that can you come to Sky? Can you come to AIG? Can you come to PwC? So, you know, that's just how it starts, I believe. Just know your message.
Yeah, okay, nice. And, you know, just to kind of touch on what you said about authenticity. So one thing I've learned, like I listen to a lot of investment podcasts, business podcasts, and they say that you don't even, I think people, when you think about like starting a new business, people seem to think, oh, I need to think of something that nobody has ever thought of before. And that is just not the case. Like, sometimes you can do the same thing as someone, but it's your authenticity and the fact that because you're like a big believer in something, it's the spin that you put on it. And people buy from people, right? Mm-hmm. That is what gives you your USP. So for people who, you know, thinking about potentially starting businesses, might not necessarily have a business idea, you don't necessarily need to reinvent the wheel, right? It might just be a case that, okay, I'm really into fitness, or I'm really into sports, or I'm really into acting. And there might be apps there that you use and you're like, you know what, this is an app, but it would be sick if X happened, mm-hmm. and if Y happened, and you can become a competitor, because authenticity, it really is a key that people don't really hone in on, mm-hmm. and think about. So I just wanted to say that there.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head, because if you ask me, Twitter is like an advanced version of MySpace.
Mm.
Facebook was like an advanced version of High Five.
Mm.
You know, you look at Instagram and Snapchat and WhatsApp, they're all intertwined and yeah. they're all similar. And if someone said, you know, there'd be no TikTok if the person who created TikTok looked at Instagram and be like, well, there's Instagram, so there's no point.
That's a fact.
Or there's Snapchat and there's no point.
Yeah.
And TikTok for me is probably a more advanced version of Snapchat.
Yeah, it's gone clear.
So, do you know what I'm saying? So yeah. it's like you said, you know, it's, you can take someone's idea and then deliver it with your own twist.
Mm.
You know, it's like sports brands, you know, Nike, Adidas, Puma, they're so similar, but they're their own brands.
Yeah.
So Under Armour's come with their own sort of twist, and Gym then now Shark. You've got Gymshark, yeah. you know what I'm saying? So yeah. it's like, imagine Gymshark looked at, oh my gosh, there's Nike, there's Adidas, there's yeah. now Under Armour, is the market's too saturated.
Yeah.
No, it's about you just being authentic, being yourself and having your own vision and say, hey, I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah.
You've got nothing to lose by giving it a go, but everything to gain.
Mm, that's 100%. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
That's right.
And yeah, just to give people like a clearer understanding on the role as well, because I feel like they're going to be listening. There's some people listening to this who might want to get into this. So for you, going back to the schools, I know that you kind of do, what is it, day-long workshops, is it assemblies? Like, talk us through the kind of different motivational offerings, I suppose, because like, what does it involve? Because people just see the big, you know, performances in the arenas and stuff like that.
Yeah, so in terms of like what I do with the schools, so I offer different packages. So there'll be like an assembly package where it's like I'll go in, I'll do an hour-long assembly for like the whole year group. Might be year 11, year 12, year 9, whatever year group you want me to speak to. Then there's like what we call a half day package, where I'll do the motivational assembly for the whole year group. Then they might have like two groups where I'll do like a more intimate workshop for them. And then like the 4 day package, the same thing, where they, you know, start the day with the whole year group assembly, and then they split the whole year into like smaller groups, and I'll see them on like rotating workshops in a carousel format again. And then with the workshops, they cover like different formats. So they might want me to focus on like helping them with their study skills, or extra motivation, or confidence building, resilience, growth mindset. Those are sort of the things that happen within the workshops. And then assembly is generally a motivational message. So depending on my audience, so a lot of my audience tends to be like year 11, sixth formers, just because they're the ones that got like their GCSEs and A-levels to
see. Did they ever get rowdy? Sorry to jump in there.
No, you know.
They're always listening.
Because
I know I was a nuisance.
But you know, it's because I'm not a teacher, and I kind of just like lay the foundation from the beginning, and I'm banter and I'm fun. I just feel like they respond to me very well, because like one of the things I do when they first come in, I've got music playing. So it's almost like a rave when you're walking into
And they know the music, like
so the, depending on the demographic, I'll know what sort of tunes to drop for you. And yeah, it's true, isn't it?
What is Club 7 for the year 7s?
Listen, if it's got to be that, listen, I'll throw Baby Shark in there if I have to. But you know, you just, and that's something that's important. When you like are playing a song that someone knows, naturally you win them over. And then when I'm now starting my assembly and I'm asking them questions, so they're not just sitting there, So I'm interacting with them, and then I'm getting their points of views and their opinions, and then it's almost like doing a podcast, like we're vibing off each other.
Yeah.
And that's how I treat my assemblies, we vibes off each other, but then I've got that serious message. So I'll teach them things about their attitude and not giving up, and you know, understanding why they need to be successful and taking things seriously. So there's a lot that happens within the assembly format. I tell them experiences of what I was like in school and why they should take certain things important, etc. And it's a good experience, man. Like I say to people all the time, like, I wish I had it when I was their age. Like someone, because there's this thing of like students just feel that they can't relate to their teachers.
Yeah.
So I'm that person that bridges the gap. They can relate to me, and I get across the same message that the teacher wants to get to them.
Yeah.
But I just do it in a way that's, I guess, a bit more fun and a bit more relatable to the students.
Yeah. I hear you. And oh my days, it's about to. Oh my God, I've just forgotten what I wanted to say. But no, so yeah, the next thing I wanted to go into, right? So we've spoken around how you started at this company, right? But I know you, you're my brother. Just to kind of tie it back, you're now self-employed, right?
Yeah.
So is it, like, how come did you make that decision? Because obviously you've learned a lot from your manager. Is there like a pivotal moment where you're like, look, I want to go out on my own? What kind of leads you to that decision?
No, you know, okay. So here's how my business started, yeah. I got to a stage in the company, obviously, like, I'm doing really well within the company. I'm getting a lot of bookings. A lot of schools are asking for me to come back, etc. It's got to a stage within that business where he's like giving me a special role, where he's like made me in charge of all of the speakers within the company, and like everything comes through me pretty much, and I'm on a retainer kind of thing almost, and I'm training any speakers that come into the company. So it was cool, but the money wasn't enough. And I was like to him, look, I love what we do, innit? Like, I'm passionate, I've got so many ideas, but I need a pay rise. Like,
you have to chase the bread.
What you're paying me is just, it doesn't meet the value that I'm bringing to the company. Like, I'm making you thousands, if not hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
And that's not reflecting in my bank account.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So I was just like, look, I'm not all about the money, but I love what I do, but I still want to be paid well as well at the same time.
100%.
So then when he was just like, oh, you can't. And the fact is, I knew he could afford to give me a pay rise because there were certain clients that kind of showed me what they charged. And then when I looked at what they charged and what I got paid, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Actually getting bumped.
Yeah.
But it's cool, isn't it? Like, I get it, you're a businessman, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then for me, it was like, cool, no hard feelings. I'm going to set up my own business on the side to like subsidize that income that I need to make.
Yeah.
So whilst this job is flexible, I'm not working every day of the week, I can get bookings for my business and make extra money on the side. And that's initially why I started my own business, just to like make an extra couple of hundred a month. And then from there, it got to a stage where like I pretty much got fired.
Oh, really?
From the company, because it got to a stage where like where clients were finding out that I started my own business. I had literally some clients say to me, because, you know, clients, you know, you go into school, you have a conversation with them and they're very like inquisitive. So they're like, oh, is this all you do? Like, and I'd be like, oh, no, I've just started my own business. They're like, oh, what? You do your own business? What, doing this as well?
Yeah.
And this wasn't me trying to poach them or trying to like promote my business. But I was just like having general chit chat with them. And they would say to me stuff like, oh, we only bought this company because of you.
Yeah.
And I was like, look, I don't want, I remember this one client specifically said, oh, I want to book you. I said, look, I really don't want that happening because like, I don't want anything. And I've come here to like poach you. And they're like, no, it's our decision. Like, it's up to us who you want to go. I said, look, I'm not going to say don't book me, but I'm going to say that's not what I've come here for, kind of thing. Yeah. So I made it very clear. Like, I never promoted my business when I was at the work, but I found like, you know, the boss admitted it to me of recent actually that, you know, he didn't manage things well or handled it well. And
but you're cool now?
Yeah.
That's great.
But he just admitted that, he didn't know what to do with me growing. And it got to a stage where I was just outgrowing the company.
Yeah.
And although at the time, like, I felt like he handled it wrong and I was a bit bitter with the way that he kind of cut me off, because it was just like, what am I going to do? My business wasn't established. Like, I was only getting like maybe 1-2 bookings. Like, I was not in demand at all because I was still so comfortable at this company and in my leadership role.
You wasn't putting things in place.
That I wasn't actually trying to leave.
Yeah.
I was actually hoping that one day the guy would come to his senses and say, you know what, I'm just going to give this guy a pay rise. But things didn't happen that way and I'm grateful.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Do you think with things happening the way they have been, it's you know, we talk about the hunger, but that is what has, you know, led you to this point and hustling, making the website, just, you know, the merchandise. Without, you know, kind of leaving that company the way you did, do you think you would have just been comfortable and could potentially still be there?
Yeah, most likely, man. And because it ignited a fire in me like never before, man. Mm. It ignited a grind in me. You see, I always say when you're desperate, man, that's when you become most creative.
Yeah.
And for me, it was like, literally, if I don't go online, if I don't put myself out there, I ain't making no money.
Yeah.
You know I'm good. I've built relationships, but I need people to know that I'm good.
Yeah.
So I literally would like go on Twitter and at you and say, look, man, let me come into your school kind of thing. Oh, you're looking for a speaker? Like, I'll come motivate. I would literally, every teacher that was on my Twitter, I would at them.
Yeah.
To the extent that it'd be like, hey, mate, leave me alone. Like, do you know what I'm saying?
You got to do what you got to do.
But that was my mindset. Like, you got to do what you got to do. I was just so determined not to fall flat on my face because there'd been so many people that had left the company before me for similar reasons of finances. And when they tried to kind of do their own speaking thing, they failed or they didn't see it through, should I say.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I'm not going to be that one that leaves the company. And I also like end up not following it through. No, I was like, this is what I'm called. I'm going to show you how good I am kind of thing.
Yeah.
And like, God willing, like, it's worked out for me and I'm doing like pretty well for myself now.
So. Here you are. And I think one thing that, you know, listeners might want to understand, something I've never asked, like, he's got a t-shirt on. I don't know if you guys can see it there, but it says No Grind, No Glory. Like, where did that come from?
Do you know what it is? I remember just one day of my speaking journey, man. I just thought about it and I was just like, no grind, no glory. Like, so many people want to be successful, but you can't be successful without putting the hard work in.
It's facts, man. We said it before.
We see the glory, but we don't know the story behind it.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, I want people to understand that, you know what, you can be successful, you can get that glory that you're so called after, but you got to grind for it.
Yeah.
You got to work for it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we live in a generation, you go online and social media, people make success look like it's easy.
Yeah.
You see trophies, you see awards, you see achievements, but they never show you the process.
Mm.
They never show you the hardships, they never show you the struggles. So my thing was, I want to mentally prepare you that you've got to work hard for it so that when the struggles come, when the obstacles come, when the trials come, it doesn't knock the wind out of you.
Mm.
It doesn't discourage you. It doesn't demotivate. Like, you're prepared for it.
You face it head on.
Because what happens with a lot of people, when they say they want to be successful, because we don't talk about the trials and the challenges, when those trials and challenges come, it demotivates you because you're like, I wasn't prepared for this.
Yeah.
I didn't know. No one told me about this.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, I want to make you aware beforehand so that when these trials and challenges do come, you're mentally prepared for it. And like you said, you're willing to take it head on.
There we go. There it is. There's the story behind No Grind, No Glory.
No Grind, No Glory, man.
And then the other famous one that I used to hear when I lived at home, wake up for the shake up. Where did that one come from?
Listen, I don't even know. That just came to me randomly. I think I was just messing them up. And I was like, whoa, wake up for the shake up, baby.
Yeah.
And you know what it was? It was people that kind of made it stick out to me. Because students started saying it back to me.
Yeah.
Like, I'd get snaps and people were like, whoa, wake up for the shake up, baby.
Nice.
My friends were like, every time they see me and I go out, they'd be like, the first thing they'll say to me is like, woo. Like, so it became a thing, you know what I'm saying? But my thing with wake up for the shake up, baby, was just like, like, wake up, like, and that whole shaking, like, it's like, I want you to wake up with energy. Like, wake up early, wake up with energy, like, wake up for the shake up, you know? Like, wake up ready to conquer the day, ready to attack the day. So the whole wake up for the shake up thing was just really like, wake up with energy, let's wake up ready to attack the day. Because you see a lot of people wake up lethargic, it's another day, man, can't be bothered, but I've got to do what I've got to do. Like, wake up with a different mindset, like, woo, like, have that energy. And that's why I say the woo, because it's like, that woo is to just like shake, give you it. That drive, that send that energy down your spine. So it's like, even for me, like, when I'm like, woo, like, it sends an energy surge through my body, but it's like, all right, cool, I'm ready to go now.
All right.
And that's why I kind of came up with that. Jeez, as well.
Yeah. I know a lot of listeners, you know, don't, you want to hear where these things come from. That's where they came from, folks. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, just rounding things off. So, like, where are you at now with your business? I know you've spoken about, you know, the three key things that you're kind of focusing on. Like, yeah, where do you see yourself taking the company in the next 1 to 5 years?
Yeah, just growing the business now. I've started to take on speakers now that I work with closely, speakers that I bring on sessions with me, speakers that I, you know, work with in schools. And the goal is to have different speakers in different regions of the country, different teams. So like a West Midlands team, up north, down south.
So you're predominantly focused in London at the moment, right? Or Essex?
London, Essex. Yeah. But again, there's no restriction to where I go. Like, yeah. I've literally been to every city in the country to speak.
I know that. Yeah,
down
yeah,
to
yeah.
the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To get a hovercraft to go to that session. So there's nowhere I've not been. But it's to train other people up to do it. I'm only one person. Mm. There's so many people to be motivated and impacted. And my focus now is building more of a team, training those people up. So if there's anyone out there that's listening that wants to be a motivational speaker, I'm taking people under my wing at the moment. I'm bringing them on sessions and training them up.
And it doesn't matter your age. It doesn't matter your qualifications.
You don't need qualification. You just need hunger.
That's it.
And you just have to have a story. And it doesn't have to be like some sort of sob story.
No.
Or, you know, you just have to have a message where, you know, you want to inspire the people.
Mm.
And that's what I would say, man. And we can work together and make things happen. Like, someone might have a strength that I don't have. You might have a strength. I might meet a lady who has a strength to connect to young ladies. Like, I can't connect with them.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I just met this guy who's been to prison and in the army. So he's got like an audience that he can
connect with.
And he's older than me. So, you know, there's different people with different gifts, and that's what I want to identify and just help open the doors for people, man.
Okay, so as we're going to come into kind of like the final segment. So you've obviously been through school, you enjoyed school, didn't necessarily do great at school. You've gone on to university. Mm. Your degree hasn't really landed you where you are today. Do you think that, university gave you any skills that you use today? Is it something that you recommend people do?
Definitely, man. Like I said, because of the cost of university today, the one thing I'll say to people is like, look, just make sure it's worth your while. So like, just know that if you're going to go to university, you're going to use your degree.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make sense to kind of pay $9,000 a year now and not really use that degree.
Yeah.
But also on the flip side, you do learn great life skills.
Yeah, that's a fact.
You learn about how to manage your credit, how to pay bills, even just doing, like I said, learning about credit. Like, so when you're applying for like your phone bill for the first time by yourself, and you're applying for different contracts, you know, it teaches you how to manage it. It teaches, it brings certain things to your attention. That might be the first time you're getting a job, because you might have to get a job to kind of help you to pay for your rent and stuff like that, because your student loan might not be enough.
Yeah.
So it definitely does teach you good life skills and financial management in terms of that respective, and even stuff that down to like cooking for yourself and doing your laundry, like, and staying on top of things like that, that maybe some people have their mum or dad that support them with that.
Yeah.
So it's just literally the basic life hacks, I call it, of how to survive, man.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'll definitely encourage it for that sort of side of things, if you need that independency to become independent.
And I think one thing also as well with uni, especially in America and stuff like that, it does cost a lot of money, but you can't put a price on like the kind of people that you surround yourself with at a university. Like, a lot of my friends who you might have seen on previous podcasts, who like, they got really cool jobs and stuff like that, they're people that I met at university. I mean, the whole Vibes and Tribes, if I stayed where I lived back in Essex, I don't think I ever would have had the hunger to travel. But it was meeting people who had done gap years at university that really set me on a path where I was like, damn, I want to get a really good job so I can afford to do this and that and this and that. And I don't think without going to university personally, I would maybe have had as much drive to be successful. So university isn't for everyone, but definitely if you know your why and you know what you want to use it for, then definitely I think we'd recommend it. So we've come up to today. This is a travel podcast, ultimately, at the end of the day. So if you had to plug one place, you know, you work hard. I know Mr. Beezy, you know, if you want to play hard, if you want to, you know, experience a new culture, what's one place that, you know, you'd recommend that the listeners, you know, try and take in at some point in their life?
Does it have to be somewhere that I've been to? Or
No. Somewhere that you're aspiring to get to, by all means.
I've personally not been to Dubai yet, so I'd like to go to Dubai.
Jeez, okay.
When we were talking on the way here, I mentioned South Africa.
Yeah.
And one of my favourites, man, Vegas.
Vegas, hey.
You got to do Vegas at least once in your life, man. It's just a different experience out there, man.
Yeah, we've already spoken about that, so you can tune into that podcast. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for today, man. But before I let you go, I don't know if you want to plug any socials so people can get at you.
Yeah, sure, man. I've got my website. Yeah. So that's literally www.
I'll put it in the show notes. But
MrBeezy.com. Instagram, which is Mr_Beezy.
Yeah.
YouTube channel, The Real Mr. Beezy. Those are like the key sort of platforms you can find. And Twitter, I'm probably most active like on Twitter.
There's always people shouting them out, Mr. Beezy, what an assembly. I don't know if they sound like that, but that's me assuming that.
Those platforms, I'm on all platforms, LinkedIn, you name it, Snapchat, it just depends. But yeah, you can find me. You put Mr. Beezy and you'll find me.
Yeah, that's a big fact. Yeah. Well, bro. Family things. I really appreciate this, man. I hope that people who have been listening have found this useful. You know, if you've got any questions, please shout us, you know, at us at Twitter. If you've gotten to this point in the show, please, guys, like, subscribe, share the thing, follow at Vibes and Tribes. But with that, bro, thank you. We'll definitely have you on again, man.
No problem, man.
And yeah, with that, over and out.
Take care. Peace. Yeah,
thank you.